Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Trash Mix Podcast, episode 2, which we entitled Me Dicen el Asesino por ahí, which means I am the assassin here, or I am the killer here. Whatever translation it'll come up with. But yeah, that's kind of what the topic is today. We're going to talk about two killer films, literally. Two guys, two famous actors that are always play killer, you know. Always had a gun in hand, or, you know, had their fist up sometimes, fucking somebody up, you know, whether it's for revenge or, you know, fighting the law or them being the lawmen. So yeah, we're gonna talk about a movie starring Mario Almada and a movie starring Valentin Trujillo, two famous actors from back in the day of Mexican cinema. And yeah, let's see, what are the movies, Joe? You tell them.
So the first movie we're going to break down is Pistoleros Famosos, which...
I'm going to nerd out on that one.
And as you should, because Pistoleros Famosos, yeah. For those who have seen it know that this movie is
This is a masterpiece. Banger. And the funny thing is, even though we're mainly going to talk about Mario Almada, there's other actors in there that were kind of mingled in there real quick. We're going to mention them because there's a lot of actors in this movie.
Actors, and there's actually some legendary actors. That'll be the first one we break down. And then the second one is going to be a Valentin Trujillo film, Un Hombre Violento.
Yeah, it has an English title called The Making of a Killer.
Which, dare I say, that might be a better title?
Honestly, yeah. Because that is kind of what the movie's about.
It's kind of what happens, right?
Yeah, he literally becomes a killer because, you know, we'll get into it right now. But yeah, there's a reason why he becomes this killer or whatever. Assassin.
That movie...
Un Hombre Violento, which means violent man. Yeah. So yeah, same thing too. He's violent, but, you know.
I just think, you know, the Americans knew how to market... movies, right? So I mean, so anyways, yeah, we're gonna be talking about these two movies. We're also gonna be covering, for those who are not familiar with what a corrido is,
we're gonna dwell into Mexican music, and then when it's Pistoleros Famosos, I'm gonna nerd out with the crime angle as well. So you're gonna get treated to movies, music, and crime today. Real life crime.
We're gonna get deep here. We're going to attach a lot of things to this. There's also going to be a playlist of corridos that we're going to have linked in the show notes for those who are unfamiliar or those who are well into the genre of corridos, and not just narco corridos, but corridos in general. So
yeah, songs about killers, assassins, and then drugs, and then one's about a horse that I added in there. But the horse belonged to a criminal. I'll get into that later, though.
It's all tied in. All tied in. So let's get right into it here. We're going to start off with Pistoleros Famosos. Actually, no. We're going to start off with the corridos.
Corridos. For those who don't know what a corrido is, that's a type of genre that spanned from, like, what, the early 20th century, was it, really? Mexican Revolutionary time. So they were making songs about people like that, you know, like Pancho Villa, Zapata, and stuff like that. Then you go into, like, the 40s and 50s and 60s. All of a sudden, it changes into, like, crossing the border, bringing in contraband, alcohol, you know, drugs. And then 70s and 80s, that's when they're singing about actual people. You start hearing the names and people start knowing who these people are. And then, in the 90s and 2000s, it gets more popular, more mainstream. And then whereas today it's more mainstream than ever. You got Peso Pluma being the face of corridos now. I mean, I don't think he's a bad musician, but he is like a defining person for now, you know?
I think we just reached that age where it's like all the generation behind us, like, what the fuck are these fools doing?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, whatever, they're great musicians and stuff. It's just not a genre that I'm into. Right?
But it's still like, that's where it roots from, though, for sure.
Absolutely.
Know?
Yeah.
So that's where he's coming from. You know, he's heard those songs, so he's bringing in his own stuff now.
Yeah, I guess that's one way to put it, is that, you know, the genre now has kind of morphed into a kind of blend of everything that Mexican music is. Whereas these older songs from like the 40s and stuff, you know, it's just straight up rancheras.
Yeah.
And it's not always about a person. Like, you know, these corridos can be about a city, an event.
Yeah, there's always going to be a city involved, a setting, like a ranch setting mostly.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know, man. It's a classic genre of stuff that I'm sure every Mexican
household has heard.
Yeah, exactly. We all grew up listening to corridos. Even if you didn't know it was a corrido, you know, you've heard these songs before.
Like, so I dated a girl and I was telling her, like, you know, there was a song playing. I was like, what do you think this song's about? She don't know Spanish. She's like, is this like a romance song? I was like, no, it's about a guy. He sold drugs. He's in jail now.
What song was that?
It was El Número Uno by Los Intocables de Tijuana. Yeah, so Rafael Caro Quintero, for those who don't know, 80s drug trafficker, killed Camarena, DEA agent. Yeah, you get the idea.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's a pretty intense song.
And, you know, personally, I know when you think of corridos, me personally, because my family's from Zacatecas, I think of corridos with banda.
So there's different kinds. You got your Norteño sound and then Zacatecas banda.
And personally, I prefer that over the ranchera style or the Norteña style. But, you know, it kind of just goes with the territory of what a corrido is, right? It kind of just blends different exactly, style of music with different stories and different characters and things like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, there's going to be a playlist attached to the show notes. So, you know, go click the link. It'll be on Spotify.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's dope.
I picked out good songs. I don't know what Joey picked, but I picked some good ones for sure. Joey, I know I trust Joey. Joey's picked some bangers.
I mean, to me, they're bangers.
They're all bangers in some way. Yeah,
they're all bangers.
Different sounds for sure, though.
I will say, though, based off of what you sent me, I didn't want to have repeat artists on the playlist, but my favorite corrido happens to be from Ramon Ayala. And you had already put a Ramon Ayala song on there. I was like, fuck. I was like, you know what? Yeah. This song's too much of a banger. I just put it in there anyway. Yeah. So the Ramon Ayala, Justified, he'll be the only repeat artist on that playlist.
Yeah, and I kind of nerded out. So when you hear the songs, they're all going to be mentioning Matamoros, Tamaulipas. So I kind of themed it out with like the border, you know, sound and everything. So it's like Texas border, Tamaulipas border sound. You know?
Well, it ties in because Pistoleros Famosos takes place in the northern region of Mexico.
Exactly.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the actual corrido Pistoleros Famosos and how that came about?
So Pistoleros Famosos, that's an interesting song because it's not even about one guy. It's not even about two guys. It's about several guys. Multiple guys. And two of them are actually featured in the movie, like their names. So in the movie, they're loosely based, but in the corrido, they are mentioned and kind of tells you what they've been, who they were. You know, they were just, you know, shooters. You know, they shot people down. They were criminals. And in the song, they just describe who they were, how they died. You know, and then the song ends with like, you know, there's just gonna be more coming. You know, and this isn't the end of the story. You know, and then it's also saying like, you know, they're trying to say that they're brave men too. They weren't even saying like they weren't just criminals. These guys were actual guys. You know, they were badasses. You know, they were brave. They died bravely.
Yeah, they were like kind of legends of
what they're doing. Yeah, they're praising these legendary, you know, men from like the 50s and 60s, if I recall.
And so for the people who aren't familiar with this this song, the Pistoleros Famosos, who wrote it? Who sang it? Because I know it didn't become a popular hit until the second time it was covered, right?
Yeah, so it was written by Julian Garza. And for those who don't know who Julian Garza is, Julian Garza, he was a very popular, like, you know, composer from back in the day. He was writing a lot of corridos, and he's interesting because he's actually from that same region as well, Nuevo León. And one day it just came to him like, hey, I want to write these songs. So he just started writing these songs about people that he knew about, you know, from bound over there, which were all, you know, criminals, you know, gunmen, drug traffickers. And then this Pistolero Famosos ones, he writes about all of these guys, you know, in one, you know. And it became very popular from there with Los Cadetes de Linares. And then everyone in that song is from Nuevo León. So, again, it's all tying in for where he's from, where he was born and everything, and the people that he knew.
It's all local.
And then Julian Garza himself is a singer as well. His brother, Luis. Uh-huh, yeah. Luis and Julian, the brother duo. So they sang as well. So, yeah.
All right. And so my understanding is that the movie was spawned off of the corrido, right? The movie comes after the song.
Yeah. So pretty much after the song was released, of course, you know, you're going to have producers wanting to make a movie about the song. So, but of course, it's not fully about the song per se, because they only mentioned two people in the movie from that song. But overall, it's still the same thing. You know, it's like, these guys are legendary gunmen, you know, they made a name for themselves by being who they are, you know, obviously, by working with criminals or them being criminals themselves. So that's kind of how it spawned into from there.
And the movie itself was a massive hit.
Oil hit, yeah. There's pictures. You look up Pistoleros Famosos, you're going to see like movie theaters from like Juarez, I believe. And then, of course, Monterrey, Nuevo León, where the movie was filmed. Yeah. Packed. The theaters were packed.
I mean,
like, that's like crazy. You don't even see that no more. Even for like an Avengers movie, for example, you'll see theaters packed. For sure.
Well, I think
this was massive. This is
a different era. I mean, yeah. you had to show up to the box office to get a ticket. That's why you see these vintage pictures, and not just of this movie, but in general, of these lines that are fucking around the block. You had to show up to buy a ticket. Yeah. Nowadays, you just pull up your fucking Fandango and you know you got a ticket. But let's go into the movie. So the first movie is Pistoleros Famosos, which was 1981, correct?
1981, yeah.
And it was directed by Jose Loza.
Yeah, he goes by Pepe Loza as well.
So which
Pepe
is Loza, the nickname. Yeah, the nickname for Jose, for those who don't know.
And it was produced by Roberto Gonzalez Benavides, who actually comes out in the movie. He's one of the bodyguards in the movie.
When they go to like the compound or whatever?
Yeah, he's one of the bodyguards, yeah. And then Reyes Montemayor, and they were both Nuevo León based. And then fortunately, Roberto died, but Reyes Montemayor is still alive.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Damn, that's crazy.
I know.
And it stars, obviously, Mario Almada, who's going to be, you know, the focal point for this movie.
Mario Almada, his brother, Fernando.
Fernando Almada.
Alvaro Zermeño.
The first person that caught my eye was Roberto Cañedo.
Oh, yeah, Roberto
who's
Cañedo.
Who's known for, I mean, various movies. Mujer Murciélago. He did some Santo movies, right?
Everything. I think he was like in everything. Like every decade from till he passed away, he was like in everything.
Yeah, he was. I mean, as soon as he gets on the screen, if you know who he is, you're like, oh,
you'll
shit,
recognize
I've
him.
Seen
yeah.
him.
You don't even have to know his name, but you'll know who he was if you've seen enough Mexican movies. Yeah.
And then another actor or actress that I should say was Rosie Mendoza.
Rosie Mendoza. She plays the love interest.
Yeah, she plays the love interest. Who she was banging, by the way. Oh, she was extremely sexy. And she's known primarily for, being a singer dancer. She starred in a lot of sex comedies of the era.
Yeah, and here she's just a normal woman. Yeah. I mean, there's certain scenes where she's dressed a little too sexy, I think. But yeah.
Well, we'll get into it a little bit later. But once she meets up again with Mario Almada, then it's like, oh shit! All right. Because she's kind of just like a background character, until her character actually serves a purpose.
And then another actor we forgot to mention. Lorenzo de Monteclaro. He's also a singer, too.
Oh, shit, really?
Very popular singer from back in the day. And he's probably the only one that's still alive, actually, from this movie.
Damn,
which is ironic. Yeah, Lorenzo de Monteclaro. So he's one of the Pistoleros Famosos as well.
Damn.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
So, legendary people right here.
and it shows because everyone in this fucking nailed their role.
Yeah, everyone nailed their role. They played it perfectly. Like, they went in and just gave it their 100%.
So let's go into it. For those who don't know this movie, what is this movie about?
So, literally, Pistoleros Famosos, famous gunmen, you know. You go into Mario Almada's character, Lucio Peña, he's just, we really don't know what he's doing at all. Like, we just know that he's living a ranch life with his mother and his brother.
Yeah, it's like one day he just wakes up and shows up at his mom's house, basically, right? That's like kind of how it starts.
He's just there with his mother talking about, life, just life in general, talk about their brother, his brother, and then his girlfriend that he hasn't seen in years. He doesn't even know what happened to her. And then all of a sudden,
she ghosted him before ghosted was a thing.
Yeah, she just disappeared. She's like, maybe she went to the north, like she crossed over. He's like, I don't know. he doesn't even know what to say. And then all of a sudden, like one of their neighbors comes. He's like, hey, they shot your brother, Lucio. He comes in.
And then shit just fucking takes
off. Yeah, and he's just like, whoa, what's going to happen now, He gets up and then he breaks the a case or something like a
it's
glass
like a lock in
like a locking case. Or he just breaks and he pulls out
fucking
his gun.
Guns everywhere.
And then he goes to the bar where his brother was shot, and the guys are still just there messing with the body. They're just like they're drunk and just fucking with him. And then Mario Almada bursts open into the door, and then bam! This is like I think maybe 5 minutes into the movie. I think
I believe it was three minutes, or maybe even three.
Yeah, it was
instantly.
It just instantly. Yeah, you're just like.
Yeah, he literally busts in the door and starts dumping on
everybody that was responsible for killing his brother.
Lucio! Lucio! ¿Qué pasa? Acaban de matar a tu hermano en la cantina de la plaza.
Hijo, este es su madre.
Fueron varios y están armados.
Hijo! Hijo!
cuida a mi madre y no la deje sola.
Sí, sí. Cuídate, hijo.
Cálmese, señora.
Mis hijos son buenos. Pero si los provocan, que se aguanten.
¿Qué tanto es un perro menos?
And he walks out, there's a baby crying, and it's like, okay. And so Lucio now is, he's on the run, you know.
Yeah.
He goes and meets up with a friend who's played by his brother, Fernando Almada. And he takes him, and he's like, well, yeah, just stay with me. You know, you can hide out here. Then they meet Lorenzo de Monteclaro's character. I think his name is Coyote or something like that.
Yeah, Coyote. Yeah, Coyote.
So he meets up with those two, and he starts working with them. Basically, they're just hired gunmen, you know, for this criminal.
It's kind of funny. Well, not funny, but it's, you know, it starts off so fast, and then he goes, and there's no real introduction to Fernando Almada's character, Zeferino. It just happens to just walk into this ranch, and he's just like, hey, what's up, fool?
Yeah.
You know, come and hang
then,
out. And
then he just tells him, like, you know, what happened.
I'll take care of your mom and all this shit.
Yeah.
And then Coyote shows up, and it's like, well, who the hell is this guy? And
he's they get into this little confrontation.
Yeah,
that was funny.
I actually wrote down one of the clip or one of the words that he says to him. He was like, "This is Mario Almada talking." He goes, "Grande, solo Dios y mi madre."
Yeah, just, and then just God and my mother.
Those are the only two people in my life.
Yeah, the two people in my life that are big, not you. Yeah.
¿Dónde está tu patrón? Yo no tengo patrón. Entonces, ¿qué haces ahí? ¿Te importa mucho? Por lo que veo, tú no conoces a la gente grande. Grande. Solo Dios y mi madre.
And it kind of just takes off from there. Cause, I mean, obviously, Mario Mala goes in and starts blasting fools. But once he meets up with Coyote and Zeferino, that's kind of when the whole story starts to kind of take place.
Yeah. They're hired gunmen. They're hired to like steal trucks and shit like that, and can kill people too.
Yeah, they were transporting something from Rio Grande to Monterrey.
Yeah.
And I mean, the version of the movie that I saw was so kind of cloudy and shit, so I couldn't really hear what was in the truck. But they're taking something to Monterrey to go meet up with this kingpin kind of mafia boss dude, who eventually Mario Mala finds out that his long lost girlfriend happens to be married.
I actually really like that scene when he first sees her. So they walk into the house, they sit down, they're waiting for the boss to get to them, and then Rosenda Bernal, this mariachi singer, she starts singing this like romantic song, and it goes with the movie and everything. Just like the scene right there, it goes with everything that's going on.
Yeah.
They're looking at each other's eyes. You see them zooming in the eyes, and you just see like the pain in their eyes. Like, oh, you know, like,
that was
they just haven't seen each other in so long, and you kind of believe. You're like, okay, this is
They definitely had that look. And one of the things that caught my attention during that scene was, you know, for the horror fans that are listening, you know, and that are familiar with Lucio Fulci, which is kind of like a cool little Lucio tie-in here. But the crash zooms into the eyes in this movie are insane. So if you're a Fulci fan, you'll appreciate that aspect of the movie as well.
Yeah, in this case, it's like lost love, you know, finding each other again.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
This ain't horror, but it's like, you know, but I get what you're saying, yeah.
It's like the camera just goes right into these fools' eyes. And like you said, you can actually see like the desperation and the sadness.
Yeah.
You can see the sadness in her eyes because she knows she's in a fucked up situation. Yeah. And you can kind of see it almost, he almost looks pissed off, but it's almost like a little bit of relief that he's like, oh shit, I finally found her.
Yeah. He knows what happened to her. Yeah.
And then, they meet up with the boss, who was played by Roberto Cañeda. And and he's like, hey, who's that broad? Is that his daughter? He thinks it's his daughter.
He's like wondering, like, well, who is this? Like, his daughter? No, this is his wife.
And that kind of sets, that's kind of like the midpoint of the movie, kind of the turning point is when they meet up, because right after that, And Zeferino, Fernando Almada, and Coyote, they both kind of like, hey, what's up with you, fool? Like, they noticed that he was kind of starting to act a little strange. And that's kind of the turning point, because right from there, up, you know, that point moving forward is when he starts sneaking around with her.
Yeah, he starts meeting with her. Her name's Myra in the movie. He's like hanging out with Myra and so forth. And then after that, we meet a new character, I guess you could say, in the movie, the fourth pistolero.
He was probably my favorite character.
He's my favorite. He's named Generoso Garza Cano, and he's actually based on a real guy.
Yeah, he's part of the song.
He's part of the song. Lucio Peña, Mario Almada's character, and then Cermenio's character, Generoso Garza Cano. So they have that guy. So when they introduce him, they're like, you know, they need like another guy to handle the job of killing someone. They're like, well, who do we know? And then they just go to this bar. And you just see Zermenio right there, his character, and it also just drunk.
Typical
and crying,
Mexican guy, right?
Just crying about a woman. And then he starts saying how he fears of women because they're a symbolism of death for him, you know. He even starts describing how a woman is in its death. You know, he starts describing death as a woman, basically.
No, no me crees. Yo te digo la verdad. La muerte no es una vieja fea y blanca, como dice. No. No. Es joven y bonita. Cuando estoy solo, te aparece. ¡Qué abrazo! ¡Me quiere llevar! Pero no me dejo. Me dejo. Me quiere desaparecer. Por eso me quiere desaparecer. Porque se parece a la muerte. Pero no. No me van a desaparecer. No. No me voy a dejar.
Yeah, he's foreshadowing his future.
He's basically is foreshadowing his future, yeah.
And that's kind of why I think he was the best character, because he kind of had this vision that a beautiful woman was like, when he met this beautiful woman, or a beautiful woman, was kind of be like his downfall. He's kind of expecting it the whole time.
Yeah.
And he starts kind of lashing out a little bit. He's kind of like the crazy one, kind of, you know?
Yeah.
And it kind of adds like a little bit of a superstitious vibe to
this. Yeah. And then of course he's the most brutal character of all, cause he's the one that has the experience of killing people.
Yeah. When he goes to finalize the hit that they hired him for, fucking sick.
Yeah.
Rolls up on this fool and the guy's like, no, don't kill me.
Yeah. He just has no mercy. Yeah. He just does it and that's it. Yeah.
He literally was just like, no, I don't betray my friends, and I don't betray a job.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah,
he just blasted this fool.
And that's kind of how Henrique also was in real life, just to kind of get on there really quick. And it also was just this brutal hitman, you know, based out of Tamaulipas. He would go back and forth Nuevo León. Same thing. Brutal guy. He'd come in and just kill people. Didn't give no fucks.
I mean, it's kind of, that's who you want.
Yeah,
you're gonna hire a hitman,
exactly.
Right?
So yeah. His character is not so loosely based in a way, but yeah, it's still loosely based on the real guy. But yeah, they did that in the brutality, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, he's, I mean, I guess we could talk about You want to jump forward? No, let's break down the rest of the movie, because his demise is kind of a symbolic part of the movie. But before he unfortunately gets blasted.
I think it's pretty obvious where all these guys are gonna end up anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you live by the gun, die by the gun. Yeah. So after this point is when Myra and Lucio have already been fooling around. But she gets caught. She gets caught by the henchman.
Yeah, she gets caught by the henchman.
And he tries to blackmail her. I forgot how many pesos he wanted.
And he's like, or I can be in your bed. He also insinuates, like, maybe you can sleep with her too.
Yeah.
And she rejects him.
Scratch my back, I scratch yours.
She rejects him, of course, and then he snitches.
And that's kind of what a bitch.
Man. Yeah. So,
he got what he deserved, honestly, because he's trying to extort sex out of her.
Yeah.
Beautiful woman, but I mean, come on. Yeah, you're not going to take Lucio's girl. He was never going to happen.
Yeah, so after that, that's when Myra runs away with Lucio. Well, first, that's when Lucio plans to take her from the crime boss.
Yeah, it's like the final stand, right? I'm finally going to take you. You're mine. Yeah. We're moving out of here. We're going to go start our life.
Yeah, so he meets up with his guys and has like, hey, I want to take Myra with me. I want to marry her. Like, all right, let's do it. And then Coyote's like, hey, there's a party. Let's go.
Fuck all that shit. Let's go party real quick.
So this is the thing, though. So they go to this party, and it's probably one of the most memorable scenes of the movie.
Very iconic. And I think you've made a post about it, like the actual clip of them driving up.
People love that clip, too.
It's fucking sick. If you haven't seen the clip, go to the Trash Mix.
It's even
Instagram.
On YouTube.
It's on YouTube.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. But
even on Facebook, somebody more than likely has it up too.
Fucking sick. These fools literally roll up. The door is open. Mm-hmm. These fools come out, pimped up suit. You guys know the suit. Yeah, the same suit your Theo's rocking at your bautizo. You know, it's like.
And then Los Cadetes de Linares are in there. They're probably one of the most popular norteño groups ever, straight up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if they're not the number one, they're in the top three for sure.
Yeah, if you've heard Mexican music or anywhere playing, more than likely you heard a Cadete song.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So they're playing El Asesino, which is kind of an appropriate song, I guess, for these guys.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Which is El Asesino, which means the killer or the assassin. And in that song, basically it's just about this guy. He caught his wife cheating on him. He kills her. And then he knows he's going to have to go to jail for it, for the crime he did. But before he goes and turns himself in, because he says it in the song, he's going to turn himself in. He's going to take whatever sentencing they give him. But he wants to get revenge on the guy that was with his wife.
I mean,
he goes and looks for him. And I don't know. I don't know about your opinion, but he says, abrirle su corazón, which means open his heart. I don't know what do you think that meant for you? Like, I kept thinking, does he mean, is he going to shoot him in the heart? Is he going to pluck his heart out? I don't know.
I mean, there's so many ways you can think of it. I would imagine that he's trying to say, like, this is everything I have left, right? There, everything you have left. And it's do or die. This is the point.
This is the point. It's over. I don't know. Every time I heard that song, I'm like, what is he talking? I just have these bad thoughts in my head. I'm like, there's probably some other thing he's talking about when he says that part. But yeah, so it's a pretty interesting song because it's again about an assassin. Same thing, kind of like these guys are. And then when they're singing that song, they zoom into them all. And they're just like listening to the song, and then they're just like nodding, like yeah, like agreeing to it.
Well, Coyote's trying to dance with like every girl in the party.
After that song's over, so everyone's all serious in that scene when they're singing, and then once they're done with Asesino, that's when they start playing like a little, like a little dance song.
Yeah, I have it written down here. El Tejanito.
Yeah, El Tejanito. Yeah. So they start dancing. Coyote doesn't get to dance with anybody, he doesn't even say anything. He just like. Moves around. He's like telling the girl, like, do you want to dance? Like, he's just like moving his hands around. She's like, oh, you want to dance? Yeah, let's dance. Yeah, it's a good scene. And then right after, the cops come trying to arrest them, trying to bust them, or maybe the crime busted the cops. I don't remember exactly. Do you remember?
I think they were already kind of
already in trouble.
Yeah, like they were already under watch. Maybe I forgot. I don't think he's
either way, but yeah, they come in, trying to get these guys, and of course they fight their way out. They go to the crime boss's house. Another gun battle.
Oh yeah, baby. You can't have the word pistoleros in the title and not have gunfights.
And Lucio's there. He's like, I'm here for Myra. And she leaves him, she tells him, like, I don't want to be with you, she tells her, her husband. And he doesn't even stop her. He's just like, fuck.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here.
He feels defeated,
Which is kind of crazy for like a high ranking boss like that. Yeah. You know, el jefe, if
at
you will.
At that point, he's just like, fuck, go. Like,
yeah, he's like, yeah, get out. I'll find someone better. Which yeah, obviously won't something, because she was fine. But.
Oh, yeah. She looked great in that movie.
And then this is like the start of the final act. You know, this is the turning point. Spoiler alert, Myra dies.
Yeah, she's killed pretty brutally.
She gets ran the fuck over multiple times.
It's really brutal. She was pregnant to top it off.
Yeah, I know. It makes it even worse. And it's kind of crazy because when it happens, it's like were they at a party or something? Or maybe he was just sleeping or something.
She was sleeping, yeah.
Yeah, and then you know, they wake this fool up and like, hey, you know, he's under the impression that Coyote dies, so he's not even aware that the love of his life is dead. Yeah. And when he finds out, oh fuck!
Of course, you know, they gotta get revenge.
I mean, that's the whole point, right?
That's how it all sets up. Revenge, and then after the after everything happens from there, that's kind of what we lead to them dying. These guys are one by one dying, you know.
Yeah, it's like
the first one was Coyote, right?
Yeah, Coyote was the first one.
Was the first one to
yeah.
die. He was with some girl. He gets shot down.
That's blasted. You know? Yeah.
And then after that, it was Lucy, I believe, right?
Yeah, you're right.
So Lucio, funny enough, so in the movie, he gets shot outside of the bar, which is called Generoso Bar, which is a real life bar over there. And in the movie, he's actually killed in the real street. So where the real Lucio Peña died, he was actually killed out there too. So
they shot it in the same street.
Yeah, I looked into it. It's the same street, same bar. Yeah, he was killed right outside of the bar. And in the movie, they do the same thing. He's shot outside the bar as well.
Yeah, and it was pretty brutal. He got blasted in the back of the head, like execution style. Just
boom. And then inside the bar, that's when Generoso's, you know.
He finally meets the beautiful woman, aka Death.
He finally meets Death, literally, which was in the form of a beautiful woman in black.
And I will say though, like when he's with her or whatever, I almost felt like he didn't even realize that. What was gonna happen? Like he didn't. He spent the whole movie talking about this or feeling in this way that he knew a woman was gonna be Death, but at that point in time, it was like he was oblivious to what was in front of him.
Yeah, because he like fell in love with this woman. He like looks at her and he's just like, whoa, she's beautiful.
Yeah. Man. Well, the power of love. Man. Yeah. Just stupid things, right?
Exactly.
Forget that fools are gonna roll up on you and blast you.
Yeah. So he dies because of the woman, and Lucio dies. I mean, he pretty much had nothing left at that point,
I mean, that was it. Zeferino was the only one that survives.
Yeah, he's the only one that survives, but then at the end, he's arrested,
Naturally.
Cop, and then the cop, he's played by Julian Garza, by the way, the guy that wrote the song. So the cop is like...
Oh, the cop is?
Yeah.
Oh, shit,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, he's one of the cops. Yeah, Julian Garza starts in the movie as one of the cops, and then he's just like, you arrest them, but there's more going to be coming out anyways after, so... It never ends. The story never ends. There's always going to be new guys taking their place.
And that explains why there's Pistoleros Famosos exactly. 2 and 3, right?
Yeah. In the long run, they're going to be known as someone. And that's how it goes, It's like you take one spot, it's going to be another group next. Never ending the gunmen.
It's kind of exactly what happens now, right? You take off the leader of a gang or a cartel or, organization.
Someone takes their spot.
The next man up, and then the next man
they
up
go down
to them.
Exactly. So that's kind of how this movie is. It's like, these guys are gone, but a new group's coming.
Yeah.
It's gonna happen again, anyways.
And it kind of caps off the, I guess, the whole moral of the story, right? It's like, you can't kill a legend, you can't kill a myth, right? You can't kill folklore. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the reason why a corrido was written to begin with. You want to keep it. In the zeitgeist of the community.
Yeah, make them remember who they were.
Yeah.
And in some songs, some corridos, it'll be about a good person, per se. They'll say he was a good criminal.
Yeah.
Generous criminal.
Well, I mean, you look at it in the sense of like Robin Hood, right?
I'm
stealing from the rich and giving to the poor, so everyone loves you.
In this case, it's just about these guys. They were just fucking badasses, They were scary, too, sick. But they were badasses, I guess.
And, I just think that... this movie, it's a 5-star movie or a 10-star movie, however you look at
it. Yeah, I don't even like rating movies, but if I were to rate it, I would rate it very high.
It's legitimately a a classic.
It's a classic. Like, if you wanted to get into, like, movies like this, like Mexican crime and action, this would probably be the one to start off with
yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely.
It introduces you to all the actors, the styles of everything, you know, music-wise, story-wise, and decade-wise even, because this is, like, around the time when those movies were popping, you know, back in the day.
Starting to get, like, super popular.
Yeah,
they got kind of started in, like, the late 70s.
Late 70s, yeah.
And by this time, by 1981, this time, it was
that's
like,
all everybody wanted to see.
Yeah,
yep,
that's... Exactly. And there's even a clip of Mario Almada talking about that, about how, like, you know, these actors were well-trained actors. You know, they were mm-hmm. able to play anything you gave them. But the people wanted fucking action. They wanted balaceras. Mm-hmm. You know, they wanted fucking mm-hmm. shootouts, car chases.
Yeah, and
fucking.
Mario Almada, that was the thing. He really respected this type of cinema, whereas today it's not really respected. But he really respected. He would say these were the movies that, you know, made him money.
Yeah.
Made the producers money, and you know, people liked them. You know, this is what people wanted. This is entertainment. You know,
this
was Mexican cinema. And it's funny because one of the movies that he says is a stain in his career is La Viuda Negra, the Black Widow. Arturo Ripstein, you know, prestigious director, famous director from Mexico.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mario Almada starred in one of his movies as a priest, and he's like, yeah, that's probably those, you know, not a regret role, but he says it's a stain in his career. Like, it really kind of, you know, made him not look good, I guess, in other words.
You think it was too art house for him?
Yeah, probably too art house, or just, you know, he just didn't feel comfortable doing that, you know? Because you look at his career after... Or before, action, western, drama.
And even before he died, like, I mean, his last later roles, he played kind of the same character.
Yeah,
right?
he was already really old.
He wasn't the shooter anymore. He was the jefe.
He was the boss, but that's the thing. Yeah, he really respected that because, you know, those were cool movies. You know, those were really about Mexico and culture, you know. Whether you agree with me or not, that is Mexico, you know. That's the reality of it. There's more to Mexico than just guns.
Oh, absolutely.
Obviously. But, you know, this is part of it, too. You know, this is something that we hear about all the time.
I mean...
Even growing up, you know.
You can't talk about Mexico without talking about the lifestyle of a criminal.
Yeah,
kind of
like in America, you know, with the mafia, Italian mafia and so forth.
It's part of history.
Yeah, it's part of history, exactly.
And it's unfortunate that, you know, Mexico gets such a bad rap with this kind of era of crime and how outlandish it's gotten compared to you know, the 60s and 70s. These fools are out here with fucking Black Hawk helicopters and shit now, but
you know, and drones
fucking crazy. But you know, like you said, it's a part of Mexico
there,
unfortunately.
Yeah.
you can't deny it all over the world too.
That's the thing. It's not even just there, it's everywhere. But you can't, in Mexico,
you can't deny it because mm-hmm. I don't like to tell this story, but I did get stopped by the narco fools. I think I might have told you in private. Scariest shit that's ever happened in my life. These fools, they don't fuck around.
Yeah. And I've had family, you know, killed the same way as well.
Yeah.
Even people from that era too, you know, family members that I knew, that I heard of, you know, killed in the same way as these guys, for example. You know, they're just gunned down.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate, but again, it's part of the fabric of Mexico now, however unfortunate it is, because Mexico is a beautiful country.
Yeah.
The
like
people,
I said, there's
the
more
culture,
to Mexico than that.
Yeah, everything.
And it's a beautiful, and even then, even when you look besides all the shootings and so forth, you get beautiful shots of Monterrey, Nuevo León, especially in the opening credits. Literally, it's just the whole shot of the whole city.
It's like a skyline shot. Uh-huh. Yeah,
you get the mountains, and then you get the town and the people.
Even like the rancho that he meets up with Zeferino. That's to me, that was like a classic.
Yeah.
That's like going to visit like a tío out there.
Yeah,
there we go.
The Sierra. Yeah, you look into that, and you're just like in another, you know, another town, another city. You know?
Yeah.
It's cool, you know. Especially over there in Monterrey, Nuevo León. Very cultured over there and very beautiful over there. So you get really cool shots of Mexico as well, especially in those decades.
Yeah.
So that's the thing I like about that movie is that you get a shot of a different era, different location. You know, it's not Mexico City like every other movie
is.
Oh,
yeah.
You're in the, you know, you're in the country,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. That's a good segue to go into the life of Mario Almada.
So, yeah.
Because he... really,
he's the face of the movie for sure.
He's
and
the
face of this genre too, this subgenre of action films and crime films.
Absolutely. I mean, he's what can you say about him that hasn't been said?
He's,
I mean,
like, how can I compare, what is that actor, that Italian actor's name, the famous one from action?
I think you're talking about Maurizio Merli.
Yeah, Maurizio Merli. Yeah, so Italian actor, and came in all those Eurocrime, Italian crime films. So when
Which
I think
are
of those
very
movies,
similar.
Yeah, so similar in that tone as well. So when I think of Italian crime, I think of that guy, Maurizio. When I think of Mexican action cinema, crime cinema, Mario Almada.
Yeah,
that's the face right there, basically.
kind of define the genre.
Oh, really, yeah. And he, like I said, and like we said before, he really respected this type of film, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the same thing with the Eurocrime movies, too. Like, they, you know, they treated them with respect. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, you got to give the people what they want to watch, right? Exactly. You can't just force feed them something that you want to make.
Yeah.
People want to see fucking car chases and shootouts and you know, explosions.
Based on these popular songs that were playing on the radio and so forth. Yeah. Yeah, so.
Let's get into it. Mario Almada, man.
He was born in Huatapamambo, Sonora. Hopefully I said it right. And funny enough, he didn't want to be an actor.
That's right. He said he was agriculture and went to college.
Yeah,
and shit.
He went to college in Jalisco, and then that's where he met his wife too, by the way.
In Guadalajara.
Yeah. The love of his life, like he says. So it was around the 60s, I believe. Yeah, him and his brothers, his three brothers, they were running like a nightclub in Mexico City, and then after the club got shut down or they closed it, I forgot, Fernando was like, I'm gonna produce a movie, you know, come with me for, you know, Mario. Mario was like, no, I'm gonna just go back home. He's like, no, come on, just help me produce the movie, you know. And then sure enough, what was the movie called that they made?
It was 1965. The movie was called Nilo de Aguilas.
Yeah, Nilo de Aguilas.
Which was directed by Vicente Orona.
Yeah, so that was their first movie.
Which kind of, it was a Western. It was a Western. Like spaghetti, so Western.
That's kind of how they started. Yeah, it was Westerns. And then they did a movie called Jinetes de la Bruja.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Bruno Rey was supposed to play, I forgot what the character's name, but he got injured.
And Mario Almada stepped in, basically.
The spot. Yeah. He didn't want to take the spot, but they told him, like, hey, you know, you got like a good persona. You know, be on the camera, you know. And he's like, okay, I'll try it out. And yeah, he liked it. He ended up really liking it, you know. And then even like people that were behind the scenes were like, wow, he's really good, you know, he looks great.
Yeah, so that's kind of in interviews and stuff, people talk about that he had this he had the face for one.
Mm-hmm.
And he also had the voice. Yeah, which sure.
And when you hear his voice,
you know immediately.
You already know who he is. Yeah, you see his face, you know immediately.
Y desde que apareció en la pantalla, la gente dijo, ah, caray, qué rostro tiene ese señor. Va a ser un gran artista, va a ser una persona que va a llegar muy lejos. Lo mismo lo dijeron los productores, porque realmente Mario tiene ese don que solamente Dios lo da. Un rostro que puede ser bueno, que puede ser asesino, que puede ser policía, que puede ser cura. Puede ser todos los personajes, ya los ha hecho.
And yeah, that's kind of how he started. And then him and his brother did Todo Por Nada, another great Western. That's a great movie. Have you seen it, Drew?
I haven't seen that one.
No. You need to see it. It's fucking great. It's a great one, yeah. And that one, Mario Almada is all out. And you'd think he's already an actor by then, but this is like, you know, he's barely starting still.
It's like his fourth movie.
But he's right here fucking using a whip and shit. He's shooting guns. He's like this tough guy out for revenge with his brother. He's really good. And then he won a Diosa de Plata, which is like an Academy Award over there for Best New Actor, I believe.
Oh, shit.
So even then, see, he was already like starting out really good in his career. And then from there, yeah, more Westerns, action, crime, dramas, the artsy film, the Negra. I like that movie, but he doesn't like it. That's what I noticed in the interview. He's kind of like, it was a stain in my career.
It's probably because he just wasn't used to playing that type of role. He just wanted to fucking shoot fools up. And,
He was just like, yeah, it was a stain in my career. So yeah, after that, you know, just everything was just action, drama. And up until he died, until the very day he died.
Which was, what, 2016, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's already like close to 100, you know. He could have lived to 100 and he probably would have still been acting. Because even though he was all fragile and old, he was still wanting to star in these movies.
If the people want him, man. Yeah, you got to get the people. That's one thing I've grown at this point in my my fandom of movies. I don't want to say cinephilia. I don't even know if that's a word. But at this point, it's like, sometimes I don't give a fuck about the subject. I just want to be entertained, man. Give me what I want to watch. Mm-hmm. And if it's a fucking 96-year-old Mario Almada movie, give it to me, dude.
You got
to
watch Todo Por Nada. Classic movie. And I remember thinking, like, when I first got into that movie, I was like, oh, maybe it's not going to be that great. It's probably going to be all right. When I watched it, I was like, oh, yeah, this is great. Fucking this banger. Is, like, defining. He even said it himself. That's probably one of his most defining films.
Damn.
Not only because it started him, you know, his career right there, but it's just, like, a really good movie. Yeah. It's really cool. So he was very into these action films. And then probably like around the 90s. He'll start in low budget stuff, you know, not so great movies, honestly.
But that's not his fault either. That's not even his fault. The fault of the Mexican movie industry. Yeah.
But even then, he was still working in them and he's still doing pretty good, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, when you have his name plastered on a bad movie, people are going to want to buy it rent it, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then he also comes out in El Infierno, which is from 2010, I believe, or 2011.
Was it 2010? Yeah, I think you're right, 2010.
Yeah.
That's a classic too.
Yeah,
I think.
That's a movie about, you know, people like this, you know, criminals, drug traffickers, and he comes out in that movie as well in a cameo, you know, as a criminal.
I remember watching that before a rendezvous event. We were at the Hyperion Tavern before anyone got there. We're like, fuck it, just put this shit on. It was me. Shout out to Jaime and Fonz. We were sitting there watching that shit. And then immediately went into, I think it was Conquest or something. I don't remember what the movie was, but classic, dude, classic. Yeah. And Mario Almada, he is the most prolific Mexican actor.
Oh, absolutely.
Has the most credits.
He's a Guinness World Record too, apparently.
The most credits of all time.
Yeah, most credits, yeah. I mean, I could say there's probably other actors, maybe, but he's the one that's known for it. That's what's so funny though, because I remember before, back in the day, it was just kind of a running joke. It's like, oh, he started so many movies. But it got to the point where the joke became a reality. It's like, no, it's actually on the Guinness World of Records. He's actually credited.
It's in an interview, he said something around 500 credits, which I don't know if that's true. He has at least 300 and something confirmed credits.
The funny
online.
Thing is, he says 300, but in a Vice interview he did, he's like, yeah, I did like about 300 films. But the stuff from videos, you know, straight to videos, probably like 1,000. So he's only counting like stuff that was shot on film, you know, like 35 and 16.
Yeah, fuck that.
Like 300
fuck
films,
that direct
yeah.
To video shit.
But like, straight to video stuff, like 1,000. I don't know. So yeah, he knew what he was filming.
Yeah.
But the video stuff, of course, he just did them every other day. You know, nobody keeps track of that except the internet, maybe.
You're gonna pay me how many pesos? Fuck it, let's do it. I'll say a couple lines in a movie.
Yeah. So yeah, he definitely has a lot of credits to his name. His brother too, Fernando. By the way, we can't forget a friend.
Oh no, absolutely.
Fernando's the same way as well.
He's younger than him.
He's a little bit younger. Yeah, he's more younger than him. Yeah.
You could tell he doesn't have the same like charisma as Mario, but he has like his own like kind of stoic.
Yeah, he has his own persona.
He's
also very memorable. I like Fernando too. Like both of them are just, to me, they're the same. Mario's more defining, obviously, but Fernando's still very legendary too.
It's one of those. It's like what's his name? Bill Murray and his brother, right? It's like Bill Murray's Bill Murray, and then his brother's like, well, I mean, he's cool.
But no. So that's the funny thing is that both of them started off, you know, very small in film, and then they just expanded. Mario especially, just because he never wanted to be an actor. Fernando was the one that wanted to be the actor and producer. Mario was like, I'll just be behind the scenes. And then somehow he ended up in front of the camera and everywhere.
You know,
became a legend on his own.
There it is. That's how legends are born, right?
Exactly.
It's just doing something on a whim.
Yeah.
Mario Almada has been nominated for the Ariel Awards, right? Multiple times.
Multiple times, yeah.
Which is, you know, very prestigious.
Mm-hmm. And his first movie, first leading role, he won a fucking award.
I mean, there you go. You know,
so best new actor.
Mario Almada, book it. Mm-hmm. Greatest actor of Mexican cinema
time. And then funny thing is, the most famous actor or actress in Mexico is Maria Félix. People know Maria Félix. It turns out that's his cousin.
Oh, shit, is it really? That's, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, that's his cousin.
Oh, shit. Mm-hmm.
That's his cousin. Not a lot of people know that, or they kind of don't remember that. But yeah, that's technically his cousin. She's like a relative of his dad's or something. And yeah, he's met her before, like even before they both became famous.
Uh-huh.
But never really acknowledged each other, never really talked. It wasn't until he won the first Diosa is when she went up to him and was like, oh, you know, congrats, cousin, or something like that.
He's like, what?
He's just like, what?
Yeah, somos parientes.
Yeah, it caught him by surprise. Yeah, so Maria Félix is his cousin, technically. And I thought that was interesting. I was like, oh, wow, you know, these two really famous, popular actors, they're related.
That's crazy.
I would have never thought
mind
that.
Mind blown. You blew my mind right now.
Yeah, Maria Félix, the one that you see plastered all over the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
And on those, like, terrible Tumblr posts from back in the day. Yeah, so when I think of Mexican cinema, people think of Maria Félix for sure. She's cool.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
She's
very
beautiful actress, wonderful and talented. But me, Mario Almada, that's Mexican cinema right there. Face for me, Mario Almada.
Book it. You heard it here. Armando says Mario Almada
is the face of Mexican. Someone's gonna be like, no, he's not. He's talking crazy.
Yeah, you, if you want to argue, just don't. We don't want to hear.
Just DM me. I mean, I'll probably not read your message, but if you want to tell me otherwise, that's fine.
Don't message me because I will ignore it.
Yeah, but yeah, when I think of Mexican cinema, honestly, Mario Almada. I mean, when I grew up, you know, growing up as a kid, you know, that's all I ever really saw when I came to Mexican cinema.
Yeah.
Mario Almada, Mario Almada.
I'm sure that when you started your journey into the Mexican movies, I'm sure Mario Almada was kind of like the starting point, right?
Yeah. I was probably like 5 years old or maybe six. I still remember. I was really, really little. Walking into the living room, my dad's watching La Banda del Carro Rojo. Very popular movie.
I'm sure we'll cover it at some point.
Most iconic films ever. The first scene I remember was him pulling out a gun from the trunk of the car. He's like loading it. He's like... And I'm like, who's this guy? You know, I was like, who's this guy with the glasses, sunglasses, and hat? And I remember watching the movie. I was like, oh, this is great. You know, one of those early memories was Mario Almada on the TV. You know?
It's one of those things where, like, you know, growing up, his movies were just on TV
all the time. Yeah,
you turn on 22, and guaranteed he's gonna pop up at some point.
62, 34, 52. Yeah, he's there.
And we kind of touched about it. Well, you in passing, you said something about it in the last episode about how he's kind of like the Charles Bronson of Mexican.
He's very much like a Charles Bronson.
The Charles Bronson of Mexican cinema. Obviously more prolific to Mexican cinema than Charles Bronson was to American cinema, but very much character-wise was an equivalent, just absolute badass.
If you like Charles Bronson movies and you haven't seen a Mario Almada movie, you're going to like them.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And, you know, Pistolero Famosos is an accessible movie, so if you're not familiar with this movie and want to watch it, you can watch it. It's online.
It's on the Internet Archive. It's on YouTube. It's streaming on Picardia Nacional. It's there.
Yeah.
You just have to really search for it, and it's there.
It's highly rated on my end.
You already know.
Yeah, I know.
I love that movie. Funny enough, where we're recording right now, I have the poster with me. That's how nerdy I am. I brought the poster with me.
You motherfuckers can't see it, but it's here.
That's how nerdy I am.
It's here to bring the spirit of Lucio into this recording. And with that, I guess we can move on to the second one, because Mario Almada is part of the second movie that we're covering here.
And then the other guy, he's also the face of Mexican cinema, at least for me anyway. He's another face, very big face of Mexican cinema for me.
Yeah.
And it's none other than Valentin Trujillo.
Absolute classic. Mm-hmm. If you don't know Valentin Trujillo, I'm sure you probably have seen him without even knowing you've seen him, because you have a logo with...
Yeah, so one of the Trashmic logos, yeah. It's his face, literally. It's probably one of his most iconic, like, drawings, too.
Because it's
in other, like, they took that art and put it in other stuff, too, over the years. And it's from a movie called Ratas de la Ciudad. And without nerding out over that movie, let's just say that's one of my favorite movies ever.
With good
Mexican
reason.
Mexican cinema-wise. Fucking banger. Yeah. Yeah, so that's a Valentin Trujillo movie. And, yeah, from that art, he's holding, a rifle or a gun. Really cool. His eyes and everything. It's drawn really good, like, because that's how he looks.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go to my Instagram, you go to, you know, anything Trash Mix related, you've seen the face.
Yeah.
And if you grew up, you know, watching these movies, you know Valentin Trujillo as much as Mario Almada.
He's like the second generation Mario Almada.
Mm-hmm. Basically, yeah. Around the same time he was starring in these movies. He was very young, though. He was probably like in his 20s.
Around there when he started getting bigger?
Getting bigger, yeah. He was very young, and he moves into action from there.
Well, perfect. I think that's a good segue onto the next movie that we're going to be discussing here, which is Un Hombre Violento, which I saw two different release dates on this, so maybe you know which one is correct. I saw 1984 and 1986.
So more than likely, I think in this case it's going to be 84. It was filmed.
Uh huh. And then also filmed in 84, yeah, but released.
And then released until 86. When you kind of look at the time, especially in the movie, it looks like it was shot more earlier than its release.
Uh huh.
That's kind of how it is with these movies. They get shot very early, and then it takes them like months and sometimes even years to release for whatever reason, censorship or production, you know, stuff like that.
Okay, and so this one is directed by none other than Valentin Trujillo.
Directorial debut, by the way.
Yeah, his first director credit. Obviously stars Valentin Trujillo, but it also stars Mario Almada as the protagonist. The antagonist.
Which is rare when you think about it, because Mario Almada, when you think of Mario Almada, he's like the hero of a movie.
Yeah.
So when he's playing a villain, you're like, oh, interesting.
And he played the villain pretty epic in this one. We'll get to that, yeah. Also stars another singer-dancer, Maribel Guardia, who's from Costa Rica. She's not Mexican, but that's just where she made her fortune in Mexico. Oh, yeah.
Very popular.
Known for sex comedies, again, being a singer-dancer. There was another couple familiar faces. I didn't really know their names at the time.
Oh, yeah, Rafael Inclán, comedic actor. And then his brother, Valentin's brother, Victor, I believe, or is it Gilberto? Gilberto Trujillo is in it. And then Gilberto de Anda as well. He's also related to Valentin, so like a cousin, I believe, or nephew, something like that. Cousin-nephew kind of situation.
It's always a family affair with these movies.
Yeah. And then he also wrote the script for Hombre Violento. So yeah, Gilberto de Anda, Rafael Inclán, Maribel Guardia, and of course Trujillo and Almada are in this.
And so this movie, I enjoyed. This was a first time watch for me when I watched it a couple weeks ago. Mm. But fucking banger, of course.
Oh, that's a great movie. Yeah.
And it's kind of not the same story, but like most stories of the time, it's about revenge.
Revenge.
This fool, Valentin Trujillo, his dad basically takes money from him to gamble.
Yeah, he's a compulsive gambler.
Starts losing all kinds of money to the wrong people. And
he gets killed. Yeah. Money stolen. Trujillo's character, Julian Carrera, he gets revenge. He finds the people that shot him, his dad. And yeah, he goes to jail. He's released. He just gets himself in trouble after that. He still keeps going. He's still shooting people. Mainly people that are like, he gets revenge again, I believe, right? He kills more people that were involved in this. And then it just grows from there.
He just kind of snowballs into being... Mm-hmm.
He's known as a killer, basically. Yeah. Which is the English title of the movie, Making of a Killer. So this is exactly it. Yeah, he's just killing more people that along the way. People that are messing with him. And then those people, they're related to, criminals, which leads to Mario Almada's character, whose name is Don Emilio. Don Emilio. Yeah, he kills one of his sons, or all of his sons, I believe.
I think he killed two of them.
Yeah, he killed some of his sons, and Don Emilio's pissed. He's like, I want this guy dead, And then, without spoiling it, he hires a very interesting assassin.
I will say that I was taken by surprise. Yeah. Well, I should have seen it coming, but...
But yeah, he hires an assassin that's pretty skilled.
Multiple assassins, because there was a couple people that tried to kill him.
On the run,
And he just, they couldn't get
the
job done.
But then there's one, which we're not going to spoil, but yeah, it's interesting. The twist of the movie is,
A really good twist. And it's just basically about revenge. But there's a lot of things, like when he's having flashbacks of his mom.
So there's a drama aspect, of course. He's having flashbacks of his mom, and his mom turns out to be like someone who was gambled off to like some rich person or something like that, Of course,
She was like the dad's debt to whoever he lost. Yeah. Was she a madame or what? She was like, because he went to her house and there was like a bunch of like prostitutes,
something
and stuff.
Like that. Yeah, they don't really say, but she is something of that sort. Yeah, so she's wealthy. She's doing well now for herself, but there's still issues going on with him, especially him missing his mother.
Yeah.
Her kind of missing her son, kind of wanting to bury that in the past too. So there's a struggle there. That's the drama aspect. Yeah, and then, of course, he's taking care of his brother, his younger brother. He's putting him to school. And then his brother gets killed by the said assassin that we're not going to say.
Yeah, won't spoil.
Gets more crazier from there.
Yeah, there's a lot of... One thing about this that I think kind of separates itself from being like the typical revenge flick, like the Pistoleros Famosos type of movie, was this kind of had more of a, I don't want to say a horror vibe, but it just felt more like a thriller to me almost. Because there's like scenes where he's killing fools, but then there's like blood splats onto the camera.
Yeah, like the first kill, which was the dad. you know, you don't even see who the killer is. You just see a shadow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you see him pull up the gun, and then boom, blast. And there's a little splatter. You know.
Yeah, there's a lot to like about this one. Yeah. There's he drives a fucking sick ass. I don't know if it's a 56 or a 55 red Chevy truck. Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. My God.
A lot of cool cars in that one. And then funny enough, there's a scene where he wins a car, right? I believe. Remember Gilberto de Anda's
car? Yeah.
They end up having like a racehorse, was it?
Yeah, it's a racehorse.
So they're doing the racehorse. He bets him the car. He wins the car. Gilberto de Anda's character's pissed. He's like, he wants to kill this guy. Which again leads to another moment for Julian killing someone, making a name for himself.
Yeah, as he should, right?
And then there's even a corrido written about him by some, I think it's the guy that he meets, Rafael Inclán's character. He's the one that writes it.
Eches el corrido de Carrera.
Afuera del restaurante, ya lo estaban esperando. Julian ya estaba pisado y ya salió disparando. Tiro 14 brazos con muy buena puntería. Tres murieron en el acto y dos en la enfermería.
And yeah, it becomes like a hit everywhere. And that's how his name is well known around the region. That's how in Durango. Kind of like Pistoleros Famosos again, corridos.
Yep, that's
how these people get known. A song gets played about them.
And a sick ass corrido. I don't know if that's a legit. I don't know if it was ever released. Either.
Honestly, I tried looking into it. I couldn't find nothing. So it might have been just for the movie.
Yeah, I think it was just for the movie because I couldn't find.
But it was still kind of, you know, same thing based on a real thing, kind of, you know.
Yeah, he's he kind of has like this it's almost like unwilling to become this killer.
It just kind of happens.
It just happens. It's like he reached his boiling point, and it kind of that was just like the next evolution of who he was.
So pretty much the whole movie, it's, you know, he gets his revenge, does his time, and then when he's trying to, you know, just live a life normally, happens again. You know, he has to defend himself. Yeah, that's the thing. He's never really killing just for the, just because he's working. You know, it's just, he has to defend himself.
Yeah, he makes bad choices. Like, he kills the wrong people.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Yeah, he's killing
That's kind of why Mario Almada's character is introduced, because he killed his son.
Yeah.
Thinking that it was the person who killed, was it his, no, he thought it was the guy who killed his brother, right?
Or
his
goes,
seeks revenge, and ends up killing the wrong fools, and Mario Almada's like, fuck this fool, I'm gonna get this fool back.
Mis hijos. No puede ser. Mis hijos. ¿Quién es ese hombre? ¿Quién es ese hombre?
Es Julián Carrera. El mismo que mató a su hermano Isidro.
¿Pero por qué conmigo? Si nosotros no le hemos hecho nada.
Don Emilio. Hay que vengar a sus hijos y a su hermano. Eso no se puede quedar así.
Lo quiero muerto. ¿Me oíste? Quiero a Julián Carrera muerto.
Then there's a final showdown with Mario Almada's character. He's also in a wheelchair, by the way. So he's in a wheelchair, but he's still really like hard as nails. He's like mean. And then at the end of the movie, the final fight scene, Julián Carrera is driving that fucking car, that scar that he won, speeding into the compound, shooting the guards down. And then that's when he meets up with Don Emilio, and they have their final, you know, moment right there. It's fucking awesome.
I was, you know, throughout the whole movie, I'm thinking like, where the fuck is this for Mario Almada at, man? Like, I'm expecting him to be like this whole
persona.
Yeah, like this whole, like the give and take between the two. This fool Almada doesn't show up until 45 minutes into the movie.
Pretty much.
And the movie is only, what, an hour 20 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty short.
He's not in there for a very long time, but he's impactful. Like you said, he's in a wheelchair. It looks fucking sick. You've never seen a guy in a wheelchair shooting. I don't even know what kind of gun he was shooting, but fool looked fucking sick.
Yeah, he had a, like, custom too, like a little thing to hold on to.
He's just
shooting at Julian's car. it's awesome. I love his character. So that was a different role for Mario too. Like, he's always played the lawman, you know, the Avenger, or whatever. Here he's actually the villain. You know, antagonist.
For American slasher fans, there's a part in this movie that I guess is like a Well, this movie came out in the later, so I guess it's, I guess you could say technically it would be a ripoff, even though I don't know if they did it, intentionally. Been, yeah. But for Friday the 13th fans, there's a sequence in this movie that you'll fucking love if you like Friday the 13th, the original. And it was almost like I was watching it like, oh man, this is like a literal shot for shot stolen scene. More than likely, that. Which also, you know, kind of added a little bit to the movie, I think. It's
it's different for sure.
And it, I think, so this is Trujillo's first credit as a director,
directorial debut. Because before that, he was just acting, a little bit of producing, because he was really young when he first started. He was probably like in his 20s, maybe even his 18s. I can't recall exactly. But well, he was very young when he first started.
He would have been... well, when he first started, he was a child. He was, well, from what I saw, was that his first credit was in 58, which would have made him 7 years
was like,
old.
Yeah, he was like a little kid.
But then it wasn't until like the 70s where he blew up.
Yeah, he was very like famous, very popular, in dramas and then some dramas with action in it. And then once you get to the 80s, that's when he's like, an action star, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And it all began with this movie, Un Hombre Violento.
Which is pretty sick. It's available on YouTube, which is where I saw it. Very, very good quality.
Yeah, it's out there, It's
no subtitles, sure. So it's not English friendly for those who don't speak.
There is an English dub, which is called The Making of a Killer. I've seen it. It's kind of weird.
It's probably whack.
The dubbing's pretty weird. Yeah, it's a little weird. That was the cover that I watched for this review, just because, you know, I had it there. I was like, let me put this on. And I was just like, this is kind of weird. They got the dialogue right, at least.
Well, I mean, that's always a plus.
And that's kind of what the thing, too, is later on in his career, Trujillo, he was licensing these movies, his movies that he produced and directed from his own company. And, yeah, they were releasing them in English, dubs, Spanish.
Were these released on DVD?
Yeah, there's around DVD.
Like English friendly
DVDs? Not an English friendly DVDs. No, it was only VHS. This was like in the 80s and then like 90s. Damn. So you'll see movies, you'll see like this one from Korea on VHS. Oh, shit. Obviously in the United States, it's in English. Europe, I believe, like Russia or Germany? I forgot. Damn. I think Germany, yeah. So he was licensing these movies around the world.
I mean, whoever's paying the money, right? Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so I'm sure people have seen it at some point. You know, if you're listening, you might have seen a VHS, like, through the foreign market or whatever. So they were there. So now today it's, just YouTube and DVDs. But those DVDs sell for a lot. I look online, like on eBay. People do buy them still. That's the crazy part. I'll look at the sold listings. I think the last one was, like, $100. It was just some cheap DVD, too. It was, like, a Walmart $5 DVD originally.
Oh, my God. It's probably a DVDR, not even a real DVD.
Yeah, I know. You never know, right? Yeah. So it's just funny, though, because, these movies do sell still, because, obviously, he's still very popular. You know, these movies are great.
Well, I mean, Violento, for example. Yeah, you think of who's going to fucking Walmart or Big Lot to grocery shop. It's, you know, it's our fucking tías and abuelas and shit. Yeah. So they're like, oh, fuck it. Valentín Trujillo.
That was the market back in the day,
I find it interesting that this fool, he didn't really live a long life either. He died fairly young, right?
Yeah, he was like 54, I believe. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah, he was very young. He didn't really live a long life like Mario did. But even then, he still worked a lot, throughout his whole life and career. Movie after movie after movie. Yeah. Same thing. All these movies shot on film, and then he did videos, just like Almada.
And what would you say, like, how would you compare this fool to Mario Almada as far as legacy?
Well, they're different, obviously, from age range and decade-wise, But they both did start primarily, near the, late 60s, early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And, they're different, I think Valentín, if anything, has more of a drama aspect to him. Like, he's been more into dramas than Almada has, so... I would consider him more of a dramatic actor, if anything, next to an action star, of course. But so that's the thing about it. So Almada's more of the face of action, whereas Valentín is more of like drama and action.
Yeah.
Even in his action films, he throws so much drama in there.
And he was nominated too for the Ariel Awards,
Oh yeah, a lot of awards too. Diosa de Plata. He won a lot of awards, recognized throughout his whole career, especially when he first started. Very popular actor. Yeah.
So what do you think? You think Almada and Trujillo are like the two cornerstones of what Trash Max tries to represent?
They're the faces. I mean, the podcast face, Almada. You see him there.
Yeah.
Fernando next to him, his brother, by the way. And then, Trash Max in general began because of Trujillo. Ratas de la Ciudad, that was the movie that started it for me, you know. I remember that movie when I was 20 years old. I'm 34. It's been there since, you know.
Damn,
I saw that movie when I was 7. And it only led to more curiosity of what else did Valentin do. And I believe this is probably like the third movie I caught on to after. Because I only saw this movie until way later on in my life.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, yeah, this guy's awesome, you know. Valentin Trujillo, Un Hombre Violento. And then seeing more of his movies after. Crazy.
Yeah, this one was new to me. I almost feel like I remember scenes, like images, or I don't know, maybe something in the back of my mind of seeing Mario Almada the poster on the wheelchair.
Art, yeah, and then there's the poster art too. The poster art is pretty iconic. You know, you have Trujillo holding the two guns with his band-aids on his chest. So it's pretty memorable too, even the poster. And then Mario Almada next to him right there with the wheelchair.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
And this one was kind of interesting too, because when I was watching it, there's a specific scene. I was trying to figure out where the fuck did they shoot this? And then there's a specific scene where this fool is pulling into, I don't know if it was a bus station or a train station. You could see like the signs that says, you know, Coahuila straight. I don't know if it said like Mazatlán or Culiacán to the left and Zacatecas to the right.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was like, oh, you know what? It's fucking Durango.
Yeah, Durango.
And so I looked it up and sure enough, yeah.
Yeah, that was another like area of Mexico they shot movies in, especially if it's like, you know, roads and stuff like that. It's Durango.
Yeah, there's a lot of open roads over there.
Oh, yeah, Durango.
Yeah, that's well.
Yeah, and then the movie ends pretty funny, like kind of just to bring up something really quick.
Yeah.
It ends pretty like cheesy, typical Trujillo style drama. And then you're kind of like, well, what's going to happen next? But there's a sequel. People don't really know, but there is actually a sequel to this movie.
And probably not as good as this one, I'd imagine.
It's cool. It's funny thing is that it feels like a different kind of movie, but it's the same character, Julián Carrera.
Uh-huh.
So there's a movie called Policía de Narcóticas, which I believe came out around the same time as this one, probably maybe a year after or two. They probably even shot it around the same time, I'm assuming. I really couldn't find any info when this was filmed exactly, but yeah, so it's called Policía de Narcóticos. Well, you see the poster has Valentin, you know, typical cop. There's like a, I think it's like a Trans Am or something. I don't remember. And then you watch the movie, you're like, this is the same Julián Carrera from Hombre Violento? Now he's a cop all of a sudden.
What the
And then there's, fuck? It has those little flashbacks too, you know, those corny little flashbacks. Oh, so they do the corny flashback of the first
That's
movie.
How they tie it together.
They tie it together. And then, he's called Julián Carrera, of course, you know, same guy. But it's just a different setting. I forgot where it's set now. It's like a city, I believe, too. And he's a cop. There's like a, somebody killing like lawmen, you know, like around him, like people that he works with. You don't know who the killer is, and you're like, okay, what's going on now? So, yeah, it's just funny. Like, I didn't realize it was a sequel until I watched it, and I was like, whoa.
Well, now
so,
I got to find a sequel.
Now there's a sequel, yeah. So, yeah, it's cool, though, but it's cool on its own. I wouldn't really like to tie it with that one, with Hombre Violento, but they're connected, technically.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so there's a sequel. So if you're craving for more after you see this one, check out Policía de Narcóticos.
Well, I know I am for sure, because... comparing the two, they're super similar. You know, it's like the main lead is trying to seek revenge.
Mm-hmm.
They both kind of fall into the violence lands in their lap. Like they weren't seeking
they weren't
it.
Thinking,
it just comes
yeah,
to
it
them.
It just comes to them, yeah. And then they end up having to live that life.
Yeah, like until they're accidental very, gunslingers. Yeah. But I do think that Pistoleros Famosos is probably the better movie, I would say.
It would be the better movie. It's not to say Hombre Violento is bad. It's not bad.
It's not bad it's at all, movie. Yeah. And I know we kind of didn't go into as much detail with this movie as we did the Pistoleros Famosos, but it's kind of on purpose because, like we said, that twist in the movie, if we give that away, it kind of ruins the whole...
The only thing I'm going to say is you're going to be in for a really good surprise.
Yeah.
And then when the brother's killed, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of when shit hits the fan right there.
Yeah, it hits really bad.
Both accessible. If you don't speak Spanish, I don't know, bust out your Duolingo or something and watch it because...
Hey, if you find the English copy of Hombre Violento, maybe you too,
Or maybe, I don't know, maybe there's an SRT file online somewhere that someone...
Never know.
I just didn't even look for one.
Yeah,
but,
I don't know, maybe.
But yeah, so seek both of these movies out. They're fucking fantastic. Both Mario Almada and Valentin Trujillo are classics.
Classic Mexican action stars, dramatic actors. They're great actors.
Legendary.
People need to praise them more. Like, especially, you know, the film scene over there. You know, you look at the film scene in Mexico, they're only praising, you know, again, Maria Felix, people like that, you know. but it's like, well, when I think of Mexican cinema, I think of Mario Mala, I think of Valentin Trujillo. That's kind of what I told my parents one time. I was like, when I think of Mexican cinema, I think of them. They're like, yeah, us too. I mean, that's what we saw, you know, on TV all the time, or when we go to the theater, that's what was playing.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah, yeah.
And those were cool movies. Those are, you know, those are the ones that we remember.
Yeah.
We don't remember Maria Felix. We don't remember Ripstein or whatever his name is. They don't even Arturo know Ripstein. Ripstein, they're like, who's Ripstein?
They did an Arturo Ripstein like retrospect at the American Cinema Tech.
Yeah, and that's cool. Don't get me wrong. Yeah.
It was great. That's good. Yeah. I went to quite a few of the shows. Mm-hmm. They weren't packed by any means, but great movies for sure. Yeah, just a complete different style.
But you know, these movies are good too. They deserve some kind of retrospect as well, which is something that I kind of did last year with Mike Aguirre with the Frida Cinema.
Yeah, that's
at
right.
The Festival de Trash Mix. So that's kind of what I wanted when I did that. I was like, well, I kind of want to throw Almada in there. Yeah, you know, I had to throw in
that
Almada
fucking movie. Was
yeah, and we showed El Fiscal de Guerra, which is a movie that we're definitely gonna have to dig into one of these days.
Yeah, we'll do an episode on that. There's multiple of those ones too, so maybe we can do a whole episode series. Before,
yeah, but yeah, I wanted to show a movie, and I was like, well, I'm gonna show El Fiscal de Guerra, and yeah, people that saw it, they liked it. And these are like non-Spanish speakers. Keep in mind that people told me they're like, I actually really liked that. That was cool.
And that's kind of the thing, right? I think part of the issue is that no one is really re-releasing these movies. No one is restoring them. So there's no real access to it, especially if you don't have a VCR and don't speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. Vinegar Syndrome, I know we talked about them last episode. You know, they're kind of delving into the Mexican world.
They're delving into Mexican cinema.
And hopefully they start releasing a whole lot more. And not just the horror stuff, but go into these kind of action, narco corrido movies. Yeah. And hopefully these episodes kind of steer people into hopefully digging for these movies and enjoying them, because like you said, there's a lot to enjoy. They're not just shootout movies. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to be said,
especially if you're just an action film buff. Like, there's people that like dwell into action films. They want to see movies from around the world. Like, there's this guy from China, this young guy, he would hit me up. He's like, oh, I really like these Almada movies. And it's like, you know, I just caught me by surprise, because, you know, it's like, oh,
I mean, Hong Kong has some of the greatest action movies.
But he also wants to see, you know, films from other countries, and he got interested in Mexican cinema, and he likes Almada movies. So I was like, you know, check these out. And I told him about Pistoleros Famosos, and hopefully he saw it. I never heard back from him about that one, but if he did, I'd imagine he liked it, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're into Eurocrime, for example, Eurocrime's a big thing, you know, people love Eurocrime. So if you're into Eurocrime, you're going to like, you know, this stuff too.
Yeah, I think the Eurocrime stuff is more adjacent to these movies than like the Hong Kong action cinemas.
For sure.
So yeah, I mean, if you're into those, then you would
you're gonna really appreciate these. You're gonna get into these big time.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you know, as far as this episode goes, you know, we're kind of winding down here, but just wanted to remind you guys that, you know, we will have a Spotify playlist with a bunch of corrido songs on there that, you know, was selected by this Will Armando and myself. That's going to be linked into the show notes. So hopefully you guys will delve into that and kind of put these together with the movies and kind of start seeking more out. It's not an extensive list at all. It's only 20 songs, 10 songs each.
Yeah.
Kind of just to
kind of give you an idea of what corridos are, and then what kind of these movies are based off of.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, again, lawmen or criminals.
Yeah.
And one song, like I told you all, it's a racehorse. But this racehorse, I'm going to nerd out for a little bit.
Yeah, let's
this racehorse was Toro Prieto. That's what he's called. Toro Prieto, which means the dark bull.
The dark bull, yeah.
This was actually owned by a big-time criminal from Matamoros, Tamaulipas. His name was Juan Enguerra. He was the founder of the Gulf Cartel. And this is like a guy that goes back way into the 40s or the 30s, you know, when, you know, they were smuggling alcohol and drugs and stuff like that. You know, just stolen goods. And yeah, they made a song about his horse because he really loved that horse, you know.
I mean,
and it's a good corrido. I mean, I like it. I don't know if you heard it, Joey, but
yeah.
It's cool because it's just about the horse, you know. But they mentioned Juan's name in there. I was like, oh, this is his song. This is his song. This is his horse.
It's probably the safe way of making a corrido, you know, because fools are getting blasted for making corridos. So, you know, we're doing one about the horse, we'll do not one about the this horse.
Not about Juan, but Juan loved that horse so much. Yeah, he loved that horse. So obviously, they're going to have to write a song about the horse, you know, because that horse won him fortunes, you know, in races. There's a picture of him. I remember when he had a restaurant. It was called Piedras Negras, I believe, in Matamoros. you'd go in there and you just see pictures of the horse. Shit. The table was carved of the horse. Like, he was very obsessed with that horse. You know, that horse was his gold, you know, his baby. Mean,
name a ranchero that doesn't love their horse, you know. That's, yeah, you couldn't do it.
So that's another example of a corrido. Corrido is not always going to be about a criminal, a lawman, or whatever. It's going to be about a horse.
Yeah.
About an animal that they really respect, or just anything, really. You know?
Well, you know, just to...
Or even cars, you know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, you got car, you know, songs about trucks and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I put one on the mix. There's a one about the state that my family is from in Mexico. It's called El Zacatecas.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's not, it has nothing to do with narcos, not about a specific person, but just about the city itself.
About where you're from. Yeah, so, exactly. Your roots. Yeah. And that's another thing about these songs. They're not even just, aside from all that, they're singing about, you know, where it's from, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the ones that I picked, it's all Matamoros, Tamaulipas based. I'm not from there. My family's not from there, but I wanted to kind of theme it out for myself
because
it ties in with the horse, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And I knew you were going to choose those, that style of corrido, like that was
norteño,
more.
And yeah, accordions, so, yeah.
That's
people
why I
hit on
the
accordion, but no, Mexican music makes cool music with accordions.
Oh, dude, I
other,
love that.
Other,
yeah, I love
other
it.
Songs with accordions, no.
I mean... You got to do it right. You know?
Yeah, the Mexicans somehow made the accordion cool.
when you start talking about drug dealers and gunslingers, and you have the accordion,
yeah,
but I mean,
you
got to
make it catchy and fun,
on.
And then yeah. So that's what these songs are about. And there's one called El Centenario.
That fucking banger.
Banger song about a real guy. His name was, I forgot his name, something Quintero, but yeah, he was a well-known drug trafficker from the 90s. He was Santa Ana based. He would come back between Tijuana and so forth. So this song's about him, you know, but it's also about his struggle too. So that's the thing about these songs. It's not even about praising the lifestyle that they're living.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's also talking about the struggles of the lifestyle you know.
It's the rise of the person, not necessarily the rise of the
So you're
going to
hear about the downfalls of them too, because it's not always going to end good for them, you know. They're not going to live on forever like this.
Yeah,
they're going to eventually, you know, fall down. They're going to end up killed or in jail.
I mean, most of those guys don't live past a certain age.
Mm-hmm.
So
just like the Centenario, you know, this guy, he didn't live long, unfortunately. But this song has been around for a long time already, you know, and we all still remember who he was because of this song. These songs are memories of these people, the country, and the time, of course, you know, time capsule.
Yeah, yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah.
So,
that's... That's kind of like the everlasting part of these songs, is that it's really of the time, of the era, and what's going on.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be specific, but, you know.
Yeah. See, there's a lot of nostalgia. These are songs I grew up on listening to.
And I'm sure anyone who's Mexican grew up listening to these songs, too. Watching these movies, probably, as well.
And it all ties in together, because, again... These movies are based on corridos or about corridos.
Yeah, yeah.
They gotta make the movie. Yeah.
And so hopefully that all kind of ties into the rest of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And if you guys are still listening and got to this point.
One more thing.
Brush it out.
So if you're more interested about corridos, I have a book recommendation. It's called Narco Corrido, A Journey into the Music of Drugs, Guns, and Guerrillas. It was written by a music historian, Elijah Wald. Really awesome book. Talks about, you know, people that wrote these songs and so forth. He went all around Mexico meeting all these writers and composers of these songs, musicians. It's really awesome. Of course, there's mention of Pistoleros Famosos in there with Julian Garza, the composer. So if you're at a library or bookstore, look for this book.
Buy it or steal it.
Elijah Wald. It's awesome.
And with that, we I guess we'll end it here.
What's going to be next?
You know, we've been talking about what episode 3 is going to be. We have quite a few different topics that we're going to touch. So haven't solidified it yet, but it could possibly be a lucha episode. It could be a horror episode.
Yeah.
It could be another kind of famous
actor
that chose to spend a lot of his time in Mexico after a successful career in Europe. We don't know yet. Keep your eyes peeled.
We'll pick something. Obviously, this is going to be a good one that you're listening to now. Next one's going to be good as well. It's only going to get better. You're going to get into a lot of Mexican cinema that a lot of people never heard of, or maybe have barely heard of, you know?
And yeah, it's hopefully it's piquing all of your interest. Yeah,
because the first episode was great. People were like, "Wow, I didn't even know there was Mexican porn."
Yeah, that's
so that opened a lot of eyes, and I hope this opens eyes with, you know, Mexican action and crime.
Yeah, and I guess the difference with these and the pornos is that these ones are accessible.
Oh yeah,
much stop better. Asking
oh,
me
yeah.
for the
yeah. Porno, oh yeah, the on Letterboxd. Yeah. You already know I'm not gonna message you. I'm not gonna open the message.
No, it's not gonna happen.
But
so.
Anyway, but yeah, you know. But yeah, so hopefully this gets you all into getting into these action crime films, looking into Mexican music, corridos. And, you know, have a broader mind of Mexican culture in general, you know, not just what you see or hear. It's like, no, like, there's more to what you already see or hear.
Yeah. And that's kind of, once again, the main focus of what the podcast is trying to do anyways. Mm-hmm. We're trying to spread the gospel, man.
Spread the gospel. Yeah. Mario Mata, the face of Mexican cinema. Someone's going to get mad when I say that. Watch. They're going to be like,
it's not him.
Like, to me, it is. Just because, you know, I grew up watching him, you know. Trujillo, same thing.
It is. And it, you know,
they're the face.
You can debate it, but yeah. your debate is wrong.
Again, my messages are open.
As always, hit us up on TrashMexPodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us online on Instagram as TrashMex, or I go by Cheddar Brown.
TrashMex.com. I'll be posting more reviews on there. I've been lagging it there lately, but... I got like 3 reviews coming. So if you're interested in reading some stuff, go ahead and go there.
Scour the website you guys can ask for certain episodes to be made. If you guys read something on the Trash Max website and you want a full episode breakdown, ask for it. We'll put it into the lineup. A couple guests lined up too to join us and talk about more movies and stuff.
Yeah, we have guest ideas already in mind, so. If you're trying to invite yourself, yeah, probably not. But we're open to hearing you out anyway, so, you know. But, yeah, you know, we got some good stuff coming, guys. Thanks again for listening. And also, big shout-out to the Fold Line Poster Company.
That's right, the Fold Line Poster Company.
We're right here in Long Beach recording our episode. Shout-out to Hope. And she also has a promotion for y'all. Give it a listen.
Yeah, she's offering a good promo, so stay and listen to the promo after this, and you will get the discount code. You got to listen to get the discount code. Uh-huh. You don't get it for nothing. So.
Yeah, see.
And with that, we're moving on.
See you later.
See you guys on episode 3, guys.
Próximamente estrenaremos
Masacre. 3 cazadores muertos y 2 desaparecidos en filo de caballo. Aseguran que se trata de un oso. El que llegue a matar al oso será el ganador. En esta ocasión no va a haber apuesta. Se trata de demostrarle al pueblo quién es el mejor.
Éntrale, Nacho. Tú bien sabes que no nos van a ganar.
¿A qué sitio van de cacería?
Pues vamos aquí a Filo de Caballo.
El problema no es la distancia, muchachita, sino cómo salir de ahí.
Bueno, no sé, no le entiendo. No sabemos de qué está usted hablando. Nosotros solamente vamos de cacería.
Háganme caso, muchachitos. Ustedes no van a una cacería normal.
This episode of Trash Mex is brought to you by the Fold Line Poster Company. The Fold Line Poster Company is dedicated to the restoration and conservation of vintage posters, prints, and various collectible works on paper. From lobby cards and one sheets to Italian folios and French grands, the Fold Line is your number one source for preservation in Southern California. Visit us in Long Beach today or request a quote at foldlines.com. Be sure to mention the Trash Mex podcast for 10% off your next linen backing service.